The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Business Person of the Year. It's been a very busy year for Epic Games CEO Tim Sweeney, who has fought tech giants such as Apple and Google, doubled down on his conservation efforts, and is now planning a transformative HQ campus on a former mall site in Cary. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, Billionaire's Stark Foresight, written by Lauren Onosorge. Tim Sweeney has built Epic Games into an economic powerhouse, and he's not backing down now. Even Epic Games CEO Tim Sweeney admits that a video game company taking over a shopping mall seemed crazy at first. Somebody on the team had found out it was on the market and raised the topic, he recalls. But that's exactly what's happening as one of the world's most prominent video game companies prepares for a transformative 87-acre project in Cary, Epic's home since 1998. At the end of 2020, Epic closed on what used to be Cary Town Center in a $95 million deal with Turnbridge Equities and Denali Properties. Inspired by the Pixar headquarters in the Oakland, California, the Epic campus, set to open its first phase in 2024, will be a place where Epic can build without running into future expansion limits, Sweeney says. Unlike many CEOs of his stature, Sweeney keeps a low profile. I'm just some computer nerd nobody knows, he says. But people across the world are beginning to take notice. Earlier this year, Forbes estimated his net worth at $7.8 billion, and Epic currently values the company at $28.7 billion. To put that in perspective, Forbes ranks the Dallas Cowboys as the most valuable sports team in the U.S. at $5.7 billion. And Epic's surprising purchase of Cary Town Center sets the stage for more growth. In fact, as one former colleague notes, Sweeney is always thinking many steps ahead, reimagining office space, fighting giants such as Apple over the future of technology, and grabbing land to preserve North Carolina forests for future generations. And that's why 2021 may go down as a game-changing year for Epic and its quiet but formidable 50-year-old founder, Triangle Business Journal's Business Person of the Year. The ambitious vision of building out the headquarters space in the Triangle was not something that occupied Sweeney's fast-working mind most of the year. It was the culmination of his years-long effort to get some of the biggest names in technology, Apple and Google, to shift their payment processes away from what Sweeney calls anti-competitive and illegal behavior. He fears that if left to their own devices, Apple and Google's purported monopolies would stifle other voices. He sees it as a bigger issue where other companies could join Apple and Google in putting out policies he feels limited entrepreneurship, making it harder to do the very kind of basement tinkering that led to Epic Games. In 2021, beyond the fight with tech industry stalwarts and the plan to build its new headquarters, Sweeney was quietly working to preserve one of his favorite things, wooded lands. He has bought hundreds of acres of land across North Carolina for conservation purposes, an activity he says will not end anytime soon. The sad truth of it is, in highly developed areas, the cost of land is so high that it's just not prudent to spend $100,000 an acre conserving an acre in Cary, when that same amount of money can conserve 20 to 100 acres somewhere else, he says. Crafting an industry in Cary. Sweeney was thrust into the international spotlight in 2017 when Fortnite, now one of the most popular video games on the planet, was released. He went from quiet coder to an accidental pop culture icon, with his game referenced on Saturday Night Live and late-night talk shows. Sweeney, famously shy of the spotlight, prefers the computer screen, typing his opinions in Reddit forums instead of giving TED-style lectures at business conferences. He rarely speaks with executives outside of Epic and admits he's not been at all plugged into the executive community in North Carolina. For example, he has had just one meeting with SaaS CEO Jim Goodnight, an event dominated by conversations about their shared passion for rock collecting. Sweeney rarely allows interviews, and those are even more rare during the pandemic. He's only been to his firm's Cary headquarters a handful of times since March 2020. I'm pretty solitary, he says. My life is about ideas rather than people. And Sweeney has a lot of ideas, ideas that, thanks to continued investment from firms such as Tencent and Sony, are helping to craft what some are calling the metaverse, a digital iteration of the internet to augment a series of human activity. In simple terms, many believe the metaverse would allow people to experience many wonders of the world, albeit digitally, perform many functions, and interact with robots, games, and humans seamlessly in a digital world. In a nondescript yellow sweatshirt, on a rickety wooden picnic table in the autumn woods near Epic's Cary headquarters, Sweeney talked about growth, the trajectory of his company is on, and the forces that, if not stopped, he believes, could halt the metaverse before it's realized. Epic picked Cary as its headquarters in 1998, soon building its own office complex, tucked away in the Crossroads area. It's surrounded by trees, just a short walk to the bustling retail center, but hard to find unless you know where to look. And that's how Sweeney likes it, with trails, picnic tables, and a basketball court. Before Cary, the firm that began as Potomac Computer Systems was a pure virtual company way before that was cool, with its founders in places like Maryland, Sweeney, and Ontario. Co-founder Mark Rain recalls former Epic president Mike Capps, Epic's publisher, insisted that the team be in place in the same place. So they initially followed Rain to Ontario, suffering through a winter. The team finished a game but froze in the process, Capps says. So the founders decided to give Cary a try, coaxed to North Carolina by one of its early employees, programmer Steve Polge, who had attended NC State University and knew the area well, Capps says. They picked Raleigh because at the time it was a big hub for U.S. Air, and because of the college, he says, for talent and the housing prices, I think they had a pretty long list of potential places. Capps, who had built a game for the U.S. Army, had licensed Epic's technology. He describes himself as a vocal complainer about what he thought Epic was doing wrong with its software. So when Sweeney and company asked him to move to North Carolina and run the Unreal business, it was a surprise, he says. But the firm made a compelling case. Capps' last game had 32 million players, but no royalties. They said, hey, come make video games and it will be a little bit of a different story financially, he says. So Capps moved to the Triangle, joining what was then a 20-person, eclectic bunch of kids with green hair and rock star clothes running a company. He recalls a young Sweeney who could code like a machine but rarely made eye contact. He would stare at his shoes when he was talking to you, Capps says. Other colleagues describe Sweeney as intimidating. Cannon Pence, the longtime general counsel at Epic, says Sweeney cares so deeply about the nature of the company that passions can run high. And while his boss has changed over the years, growing as a leader, that stubborn conviction remains, and to Epic's benefit. Pence describes a leader who is extremely hands-on, not about the color of an interface or a particular graphic, but about the overall tone and the long-term relationship with the consumer. He concentrates on the big picture, not arbitrary details, Pence says. He thinks several steps ahead about how each decision can lead into the next one, and he's not afraid to say no. It might seem necessary that the head of a company of this scale has to stay super high level and removed from the action, but that's not the case at all, Pence says. He's in the room where the decisions are being made. He's in the thick of it. Colleagues repeatedly say they feel heard in a typical meeting. Sweeney listens to ideas, the calculating wheels in his brain turning. The best ideas win, Pence says. Sweeney, through implementing what some call an idea-based meritocracy, has created a real team of believers. Pence, who began by just representing Epic in court, was compelled to go all in on Epic as general counsel, not just for the game it was producing, but for the metaverse Sweeney is trying to build. Sometimes, as a lawyer, you have to support issues or facts or clients that you may not feel great about. I feel really fortunate that I get to advocate, be heard on doing the right thing, Pence says. It's Sweeney's contagious conviction, colleagues say. He's very direct and very clear, says company president Adam Sussman. Sussman was lured to Epic from Nike in 2020, attracted to Sweeney's vision after meeting with him and the rest of the leadership team. For him, it was about impact beyond the gameplay. Sweeney wanted to take interactivity to the next level, making his metaverse concept a reality. Sweeney was all in, Sussman says, not afraid to make short-term sacrifices to get to the right answer in the future. That refreshing focus had Sussman wanting to be all in, too. I felt my whole career was building up to this career with Epic, Sussman says. Both Pence and Sussman describe a fast-paced culture that rewards ideas. Instead of publicly calling out his employees, Sweeney prefers one-on-one praise. It doesn't happen every day, but when Sweeney does give a compliment, it means something, Pence says. The culture Sweeney crafted in Kerry, and Pence says Sweeney was extremely intentional about crafting it, was so addictive it had a multiplier effect on the ecosystem. When Capps retired in 2012 after liquidating shares as part of Tencent's investment, he created his next startup in the region, Diveplane. Acclaimed video game designer Cliff Bleszinski, who also left the company in 2012, made a similar move, creating his own video game company and investing in a slew of local restaurants. Epic veteran Matthew Shambari founded Lightforge Games in Raleigh. Josh Fairhurst, also formerly of Epic, co-founded Limited Run Games and the Mighty Rabbit, and the list goes on. Epic, led by Sweeney, had created a movement in the region, one that couldn't be contained by the walls of its headquarters. All these years later, Sweeney definitely doesn't stare at shoes. Backed by years of validation, including billions in venture capital dollars, Sweeney has developed a sense of confidence in what Epic does, evidenced by how passionately he talks about the company's growth. Much of the growth happens suddenly. That group of kids with wild hair has grown to more than 3,200 people. Sweeney, always 10 steps ahead, sees it continuing, and hence the mall move. Staying on its current average would require compromises, he says, including an underground parking garage and paving over some of the wooded areas. It didn't really lead to a great quality of life situation, he says. Sweeney envisions a place where people can collaborate across time zones, and his team is currently evaluating what that might translate to as far as the design of the new headquarters in a post-pandemic world. Epic is a very collaborative company. We don't have a bunch of different divisions, he says. We're not like General Electric. We are one company with one vision. And big dollars are backing that vision. In April, Epic confirmed another $1 billion strategic investment led by tech firm Sony. The news followed a $1.8 billion raise in 2020, a $1.3 billion funder in 2018, and a $330 million deal in 2012 that included a 40% stake by Tencent Holdings. Sweeney, who still holds control of the company, insists Tencent has never attempted to influence Epic's policy based on China concerns. He says that at Epic, simplicity is key, which is why, though it's always a possibility, he does not foresee an IPO in the next few years. We always try to keep Epic simple, and at some point in the future, being a public company might be simpler than being a private company, Sweeney says. What's not simple, however, is the conflict the firm finds itself in federal court. Sweeney versus Cook. Sweeney uses an Apple iPhone. I'm a heretic, right? He says. I adhere to the faith, but I question the orthodoxy. That orthodoxy is the subject of ongoing litigation between Epic and Apple and Google, lawsuits that have made global headlines. Of course, while all this was going on in court filings, Sweeney is also quick to point out his first and only email in 2015 to Apple CEO Tim Cook was never answered. Sweeney recognizes the enormity of targeting two of the biggest companies in the world, but he implies he had no choice but to fight, both for the little guy and in defense of the universe firms like Epic are trying to help build, an interactive, internet-driven social reality. Science fiction writers call it the metaverse, he says. And behemoths such as Apple and Google, who he says have built monopoly stores and payment systems, are threatening that future. If Apple doesn't want the metaverse to exist, Apple can simply crush it by instituting policies that don't let anybody else build one except for themselves, and that has to be stopped, Sweeney says. For a long time, Apple was taxing the mobile economy unfairly. That's continuing, but it's about to reach a much more insidious level where they are actually transforming the future of humanity in a very negative way, which puts two companies to absolute control of the consumer computing experience. It has to be stopped, he repeats with conviction. Sweeney is a clear history buff. The last movie he saw was The Last of the Mohicans, the 1992 movie whose scenes were shot a few miles from land he purchased for conservation in western North Carolina. The comparisons he uses to enhance his arguments about tech monopolies, too, show a careful attention to historic facts. He compares the situation with Apple and Google to what happened in the early days of railroads. Railroad monopolies had the power to set prices and exclude competitors, a practice the Interstate Commerce Act stopped in 1887. Apple and Google may not be sending locomotives down tracks, but they are controlling how their metaphorical railroad is accessed in a way Sweeney finds scary. The railroad builder has the right to operate their businesses and to make a profit, but what they do not have the right to do is to use their monopoly in the transportation business to impose monopolies on other businesses by limiting the ability of others to access the railroads, he says. Sweeney claims Apple as a hardware firm can compete with hardware providers, but Apple cannot use its monopoly over the iOS hardware in order to impose a monopoly over stores. Sweeney's rise. Sweeney began his own coding obsession at the age of 9, tinkering on an Apple II computer. He taught himself how to program with the help of online bulletin boards and old-fashioned trial and error. He mowed lawns to pay for hardware. He developed his first game, ZZT, by using a text editor. In 1991, Sweeney, then a 21-year-old, soon-to-be college dropout, he finished his mechanical engineering degree only a few years ago, started what would become Epic at his parents' house in Potomac, Maryland. Through computers, he found his voice. If the lawsuits fail, Apple and Google will dictate not just prices but also policies to everybody. Then they will control everybody's online lives in minute detail in the future, Sweeney says, painting a version of dystopia that he's used to incense his followers in past tweets and Reddit posts. Apple, Sweeney insists, has nothing to do with Fortnite's success. Sweeney says it was already a successful game on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation, and that at the peak of Fortnite's dominance, iOS accounted for just 10% of the active player base. He just wants coders to have the same opportunities he had, he says, something Sweeney says is impossible unless big hardware firms back off. Sweeney is in his zone when talking about the metaverse and its threats, but it's clear he'd rather be coding. Sweeney is a thinker, not a talker, and isn't afraid to admit it. He points to Fortnite, saying it's the game, not him individually, that's the sensation. A passion for conservation. When he's not coding, he's often immersed in his side project, investing in land and working to turn it over to conservation entities. In October, for example, his Conservation LLC purchased nearly 295 acres south of Siler City for more than $1.7 million. Part of a nature conservation project focused on the Rocky River and Bennett Flatwoods. Sweeney, who grew up surrounded by woods in Maryland, made similar buys in western North Carolina. Sweeney says he remembers watching the woods in his hometown get paved over to make way for mansions and Mack mansions and everything of the sort. I actually moved to North Carolina to escape the crowding of the town I grew up in, he says, noting he saw the same thing was starting to happen here. So Sweeney started to collect acreage, creating what he calls a conservation corridor. The goal is to mirror park plans in the Northeast, where parks are collected into massive corridors that link multiple conservation areas together. North Carolina kind of lacks that, he says, adding that he's trying to connect areas where there's really nice conservation land that's ready to be linked up through forest. In western North Carolina, that means connecting protected wooded areas such as Pisgah National Forest and Chimney Rock, and it's required an opportunistic approach. During the last real estate implosion, when investment groups were looking for an out, he pounced. There was an opportunity to put together just an amount of land that wouldn't be possible in normal economic times, he says. Sweeney works with foresters to source deals, people with connections to the land going back generations, he says. And Sweeney finds his money goes further in western North Carolina, which is why that's where much of his conservation efforts are focused. He takes the same tactical approach with everything, from the business he started when he was 20 to the litigation to his conservation mission. While longtime colleagues say he's changed, developing a strong business acumen and a confidence that shy kid coding at his parents' house lacked, Sweeney insists he's still the same guy. I haven't really changed in my way of approaching Epic that much, he says. I'm still the same person. It's amazing how much it's evolved. It went from being a really small, little industry where I released my first game, and as a mail order product, we'd get two or three orders a day, and I was like, wow, we're rich. The $60 a day was an incredible rush back then, as Sweeney copied floppy disk after floppy disk and mailed them directly to the customers. Today, there are billions of gamers, and the industry has evolved to multiple platforms and genres, and many of those developers are using the Unreal Engine development platform Epic Games invented. It's really impressive how it's come about, he says. A big part of that industry transformation was driven by Epic, which changed the game with Fortnite, attracting casual gamers, the so-called noobs. Titles like Gears of War and Call of Duty had been unlikely to grab. It's gun and blood and really, really hardcore war experience, Sweeney says of Call of Duty. Whereas Fortnite was zany. Even though it's a shooter game, it's just always fun and whimsical and not too serious. We saw a huge set of people who weren't traditional gamers come in. Over the years, Epic has proven its model wasn't just a fluke, it wasn't just a fad. Games like Minecraft, Roblox, and Fortnite are proving a widely accessible social entertainment experience has a major place in the industry. One thing that might surprise people about Sweeney is that he doesn't actually describe himself as much of a gamer. But I've played thousands of hours of Fortnite, he says. In Cary, the industry has exploded. Cap says it was gradual at first. Red Storm Entertainment, now owned by Ubisoft, spinning out of the computer science department at UNC Chapel Hill. Epic came soon after, and the talent the two would attract would spin out to create even more companies. Sweeney has no regrets about any of it. I think that things have worked out pretty well for me, he says. And now we're going to go to the Viewpoint page to read a related editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Why We Chose Epic Sweeney as our BPOY, Business Person of the Year. In the end, this was one of the easiest years in recent memory for TBJ's news reporters and editors to choose our Business Person of the Year. Like any year, we started off with some 30 to 40 names of executives who have had a remarkable year in business, charity work, and community engagement, and then narrowed it down to a small list of finalists who were then vetted for hours before coming up with a winner. We went through the process, and it probably took less than half the time this year in picking our Business Person of the Year. Tim Sweeney rose to the top early and stayed there. We were worried about access since this community knew so little about what Forbes calls the richest North Carolinian, with a net worth of more than $7 billion, surpassing Jim Goodnight of SAS last April. A list published later in the year by the same magazine pushed Goodnight ahead of Sweeney. The Epic Games team removed all the uncertainty by inviting us to their campus to spend time with Sweeney. Sweeney, who owns about 28% of Epic, is a different kind of leader. I've yet to meet a business leader in our community who would leave you inspired, puzzled, awestruck, and eventually confused all at the same time. Sweeney is not comfortable talking about his personal journey, but his excitement to talk about the future of gaming, a digital universe, and why he is fighting so hard against big tech giants such as Apple and Google would leave you with the impression that we're watching a genius at work in real time. Ask him a question and you could see the pensive face and deliberate use of words he really, really thinks before he opens his mouth. Beyond his big tech fight, Sweeney's contribution as a corporate citizen in the Triangle is about to go into hyperdrive when the company gets ready to announce what it will do with the Cary Town Center Mall and 90-odd acres around it. Epic bought the mall and the acreage to build its future global headquarters. But Sweeney did not stop there in 2021. With all this going on, he quietly started buying hundreds and hundreds of acres around North Carolina with one goal in mind, to preserve the forest land and keep developers out. By his own admittance, Sweeney acknowledges he doesn't network or hang out with other Triangle executives at country clubs, resorts, and in boardrooms, and he is perfectly comfortable in his own skin with that. He loves ideas much more than people. He would rather spend hours talking about an idea and then watching it being executed. Sweeney's actions with Epic could truly be a game changer for the Triangle. If he succeeds with his metaverse initiative, one can only imagine the ripple effect Epic will have on other industries who may want to be physically near its Cary headquarters. What, however, worries me about Epic is one of its largest shareholders, China's Tencent Holdings. Chinese President Xi Jinping in recent weeks has been very aggressive toward Chinese tech companies and forcing these companies to share customer data. For now, Tencent is playing nice with Xi and has pledged almost $16 billion to support Xi's Common Prosperity Initiative. Epic cannot afford to have Tencent share its customer data with anyone, really. If that happened, Epic will lose a lot of customers. Sweeney is adamant Tencent has been a good owner, and the company has faced minimal headwinds coming from the Far East. We cannot wait to track and report on Sweeney's progress in developing the metaverse concept and making Epic bigger and more relevant to the Triangle economy in the future. Only time will tell, but we will be there to chronicle the journey. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Pinehurst to host new championship. Pinehurst Resort, already slated to host several men's and women's U.S. Opens in the coming decades, will soon host another championship. The U.S. Golf Association is adding a new national championship to its lineup called the U.S. Adaptive Open Championship, which will be open to golfers with disabilities. The first two championships will be held in 2022 and 2023 at the Pinehurst No. 6 Golf Course at the Pinehurst Resort in Moore County. Next year's tournament will be played July 18 through 20. Pinehurst has been home to so many storied championships throughout our history, but to witness adaptive golfers competing for this new national championship will surely be among the most memorable, says Tom Pashley, president of Pinehurst Resort. We are grateful to the USGA and the adaptive golf community for this opportunity. The tournament will be played over 54 holes and is open to males, females, professionals, and amateurs with physical impairments, sensory impairments, or intellectual impairments. Pinehurst is becoming more ingrained in the USGA as it's scheduled to host many U.S. Opens in the future, including the men's 2024 U.S. Open. Work also continues on the USGA's Golf House Pinehurst project, which will bring 40,000 square feet of office and museum space to the village. Here come the lists, what we searched. The end of the year always yields some interesting lists, and Google's look at top trending near me searches yield some interesting nuances. For example, both the Raleigh and Durham markets had COVID vaccine near me at the top of the list and COVID testing near me at number 3. But second for Raleigh was movie theater near me, and Durham had gas station near me. Also making Raleigh's top 10, but not Durham's, were ice cream and tattoo parlor. Over in Durham, they were searching for urgent care and car washes. Interesting. Sounds like people in Raleigh like to get ice cream and a tattoo before heading to the movies, while in Durham, they stop for gas and a car wash after leaving urgent care. Chung addresses Eastern North Carolina CEOs. As the Greenville area looks to add jobs, CEOs from around the region huddled December 7 for a conversation with Chris Chung about the state's economic efforts. Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, spoke at a CEO social hosted by the Greenville-Pitt County Chamber of Commerce and the Greenville-Eastern North Carolina Alliance. Greenville has long benefited from East Carolina University and is looking to leverage that and attract more industry. The alliance, launched in October 2020 as an effort to help harness the area's assets and attract more industries, especially advanced manufacturing and pharmaceuticals. Greenville has a robust healthcare industry, and 40 people attended the event at ECU's Health Sciences Campus Student Center. ACC sees early attendance dip. One trend to watch as the men's college basketball season unfolds this season is attendance, as numbers in the ACC are down at the start of the season. Generally, attendance is lighter early on as teams play softer schedules before getting heavily into conference play in January, so you'd expect numbers to tick up. Right now, UNC is averaging 16,874 fans in the Smith Center, down from the 20,102 it averaged in the 2019-2020 season. And NC State University is averaging 12,066 at PNC Arena, down from the 15,150 2 years ago. Duke University is still packing Kerman Indoor Stadium at 9,314 per game. The issue could simply be the lighter schedules and lingering concerns about the pandemic, but it's certainly possible that fans, after spending a year away, could have shifted to patterns where they're more likely to stay home and watch on television. Dominion drops hotel from project. Dominion Realty Partners is finalizing plans and eyeing a 2022 start on its Salisbury Square project in downtown Raleigh. Plans call for a pair of 20-story mixed-use towers, one mixed-use, one residential, and a 4-story residential building wrapping around a parking deck, altogether totaling 587 apartments plus office and retail space. We hope to have something coming out of the ground mid-next year, says Chris Carlino, Dominion's chief operating officer. Dominion announced in March 2020 it had purchased 4.9 acres from the North Carolina Association of Educators. Dominion has filed new renderings with the city, and Carlino says the company is still finishing plans for the site, but he says the plans have pulled away from including hotel space as the market continues to be roiled by the last 2 years. And finally, Food Lion to add another location. Fast-growing Knightdale is looking to add another grocery store. Food Lion recently bought property at 9400 Poole Road for $1.26 million. The vacant lot was previously owned by a group of family members who purchased it for $235,000 in 2000. Food Lion, founded in 1957 in Salisbury, now operates more than 1,000 stores and is currently owned by Netherlands-based Ahold Delhaize. One of those locations is in Knightdale, only 5 miles from the new location. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Finance Tech page written by Lauren Onasorge. Chapel Hill firm bets on cryptocurrency. Mark Yusko helps Winklevoss twins raise $400 million. A Chapel Hill firm is making a $61 million bet that a pair of famous entrepreneurs have created the go-to platform for institutions exploring cryptocurrency. Morgan Creek Capital recently led New York-based Gemini's $400 million growth equity round, a raise that valued the six-year-old cryptocurrency exchange at $7.1 billion. Morgan Creek CEO Mark Yusko says it came down to two things: extraordinary founders and opportunity. Of course, Yusko had heard of the Winklevoss twins, Cameron and Tyler, long before Gemini came on the firm's radar. Yusko, like most industry watchers, had heard about the pair's lawsuit against Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, claiming he had stolen their idea when he created the social media platform while they were all at Harvard University. And Yusko liked their instincts, how they pounced on the non-fungible token trend by buying out a platform under the Gemini umbrella. But Yusko says the pair were still a surprise and nothing like their pompous portrayal in the film The Social Network. They're actually kind of quiet. They're curious, deferent, not arrogant, and very humble, he said. Spending time with the Winklevosses, Yusko found them to be thoughtful and deliberate, not at all hyperbolic, he says. And that's what made it easy for Yusko's firm to write the check, he says, that and their track record of success with cryptocurrency. Yusko is a self-described picks and shovels investor. Instead of investing in the gold mine, he pours money into the metaphorical picks and shovels the prospector's use. In this case, Gemini is hedging its bets with a similar approach, betting on the exchange, which continues to make money regardless of crypto volatility. Yusko says, as long as investors are trading. Toyota deal could spark more foreign dollars for North Carolina. Foreign direct investment is creating jobs in North Carolina, but not as quickly as in neighboring states such as Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Georgia, a new study shows. A new report out of the Global Business Alliance details the employment impact of the 1,140 international companies in North Carolina. Firms such as Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies, Lenovo, GlaxoSmithKline, and Novo Nordisk, which altogether add up to support 292,500 workers, with 130,300 in manufacturing. But while FDI employment rose 20.9% in North Carolina from 2014 to 2019, compared to overall private sector employment growth of 12.1% in the state, that pales in comparison to Georgia's growth, 31.6%. John Boyd, a site selection consultant, says the recently announced Toyota battery plant in the Triad could spur more investment. That is a transformational project, he says, calling the electric vehicle market a multifaceted one with opportunities in research and design as well as other battery products. Japan already had a good relationship with North Carolina. So this Toyota's comfort in investing in North Carolina is a great endorsement and will give comfort to other countries in Asia, Boyd says. Issuer Direct eyes downtown Raleigh options. Raleigh-based cloud communications firm Issuer Direct Corporation wants to expand downtown, but other tech metros are on its radar too. That's according to CEO Brian Balberni, who confirmed that the firm, with more than 100 employees, is currently negotiating for more space in its building. We want to keep our team together, he says. We're looking for expansion in our building and or other markets outside Raleigh if we can't get what we need here in this facility. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Sidney Hinton, the former CEO of PowerSecure, after reeling in more than $8 million for his new startup, Utility Innovation Holdings in Raleigh, according to a securities filing. This came 2 months after closing on a $2 million round. This entire business was conceived around green investing. How do we make the world a better place from a sustainability standpoint? And finally, we have a big number, $71 billion. Approximate amount of capital investment in North Carolina is sitting on when it comes to companies looking to relocate or expand. Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says his team is working on 213 recruiting projects totaling more than 69,000 potential new jobs. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Canadian firm plans life sciences growth. New owner, Oxford Properties Group, to expand RTP campus. The new owners of an office campus in Research Triangle Park are planning a major expansion amid the national boom in demand for life sciences space. In November, Toronto's Oxford Properties Group paid $138 million for the Research Commons office campus. On December 6, the group announced plans for a massive life sciences campus and plans to buy an adjacent property at 78 TW Alexander Drive to bring an additional 510,000 square feet of life science development across both sites. The plan would bring the total to 940,000 square feet of office and life science space in the campus. Deed records don't yet reflect the 78 TW Alexander Drive purchase, but the company said the two acquisitions have a combined total of $158.6 million. Substantially growing our dedicated life sciences business has been and remains one of our highest conviction investment strategies and top global priorities at Oxford, said Chad Remus, Executive Vice President, North America at Oxford Properties. At 78 TW Alexander, the company will move ahead with plans for a 95,500 square foot current Good Manufacturing Practices, or CGMP, facility on the site. Those plans were filed earlier this year by Davidson Craven, a commercial real estate investment firm in Winston-Salem. The parcel totals 14.5 acres. At Research Commons, the campus currently features just under 430,000 square feet of office and life science space across five buildings. The property also features more than 18 acres of developable land, and the new owners plan to bring two new life science buildings to that part of the property. Highwood's headquarters sold for $35 million. The headquarters of Raleigh-based Highwoods Properties has a new owner after the real estate firm sold a pair of buildings to longtime Raleigh investor and businessman Dean Debnan. An LLC managed by Debnan paid $35.5 million for a pair of office properties, including Highwoods headquarters building, Smoketree Tower, and the smaller Cottonwood building next to it, according to a deed dated December 2nd. The buildings are situated at 3100 and 3128 Smoketree Court off Highwoods Boulevard in Northeast Raleigh. The sale also included a surface parking lot at 3120 Smoketree Court. Debnam is the former CEO of Raleigh-based Workplace Options, which recently formed a partnership with private equity firm Windrose Health Investors. He has also been active in the local real estate scene. Highwoods Properties built Smoketree Tower in 1984, according to Wake County records, and previous TBJ reporting has the company first occupying space in the tower in 1986, with subsequent expansions in the years since. The property features 151,114 square feet of office space across 11 stories. The Cottonwood building, meanwhile, is three stories and has 40,150 square feet of space, according to the company's website. That building opened in 1983, and Highwoods bought the property in 1994 for $3.844 million, according to county records. Logan's sells station to New York developer. New York developer Turnbridge Equities has paid $8.5 million for the Seaboard Station home to Logan's Garden Shop at 707 Seamart Drive in Raleigh. The shop has been an institution for more than five decades and has operated at the former train station since Robert Logan Jr. and his wife Julie moved the family business there in 1991. Since then, their children, Joshua and Leslie Logan, have led the business. The station dates to 1942. Office Park lands two new leases. A Morrisville office park has landed a pair of new office leases. filling important spaces as the office markets in the Triangle and around the country remain soft. This month, IXL Learning Incorporated and CTI Tower signed new leases in Perimeter Park. IXL already has offices in the park but signed on to new and expanded space, moving its regional headquarters to a 45,236-square-foot space at 1600 Perimeter Park Drive. CTI Tower signed on to 2,535 square feet on the first floor of 3300 Paramount Parkway. And finally, we have a big number, $79.9 million. The amount Danville, California-based Waterford Rhino LLC recently paid for the 270-unit Braxton at Briar Creek Apartments, or $295,926 per unit. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. The first headline, Pinehurst Hotel to undergo revamp. With U.S. Open ahead, the Carolina Hotel will be getting a fresh look. As temperatures outside cool, Pinehurst Resort is using the opportunity to renovate one of its most iconic properties. Renovations on the Carolina Hotel began this month, the resort announced December 1, and include work on the rooms, lobby, and an outside area. A Pinehurst spokesperson declined to share what the renovations will cost. Much of the project will be done over the winter months and the first half of 2022. The rooms will be renovated to have a brighter tone with all new fixtures and expanded bathrooms. Room lighting and soundproofing will also be improved. Work on the guest rooms will be done in three stages to limit the impact on guests. The hotel's lobby, room corridors, and coffee shop will be reimagined, the resort says. Lobby floors, walls, and ceilings will be updated. The resort says updates will be made with a nod to the hotel's history, similar to renovations done in 2019 on another Pinehurst Resort property, the Manor. Outside, the outdoor seating area will be expanded with fire pits near the Ryder Cup Lounge. Pinehurst has enjoyed a period of significant enhancements, updates, and changes over the last decade, says Bob Dedman, Jr., Pinehurst Resort CEO. This is another opportunity for us to continue to improve on the overall experience. Pinehurst Resort is making these renovations with an eye on the 2024 U.S. Open, which is continually one of the biggest economic drivers in Moore County. The resort says the extent of the room renovations will be finished before the tournament. Pinehurst will also host the Open in 2029, 2035, 2041, and 2047. Raleigh firm targets fast-growing Youngsville. A local developer is looking to bring hundreds of new homes to fast-growing Franklin County. JJS Youngsville, an LLC addressed to Raleigh real estate firm APG Capital, is proposing to build a housing community with 267 single-family homes and 95 townhomes, according to Youngsville town documents. The matter was scheduled to be discussed during a town council meeting in November, but a decision on a development agreement was postponed pending further negotiation, says Emily Hurd, town clerk of Youngsville. The community would be located on 85 acres along NC Highway 96, near where the road intersects U.S. Highway 1. The land sits about half an hour north of downtown Raleigh, up U.S. Highway 1. APG Capital is led by Raleigh real estate veteran Jim Anthony and has an active presence in the Triangle. Builder grabs 100 acres in sizzling market. An LLC addressed to Bradley Built Incorporated bought 108 acres in Harnett County for more than $1.2 million, according to a deed filed November 30th. The land sits along NC Highway 27, about 4 miles southwest of downtown Lillington. Bradley Built is an Anger-based business that builds custom homes and also does commercial construction. The company was started by Bradley Stansel, a third-generation contractor, according to the company's website. It's unclear what the plans for the land are, as Bo Bridgers, vice president of operations at Bradley Built, declines to comment on the purchase. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Beridiana Frausto, owner of Fonda Lupita, on bringing her Sanford restaurant to the core Triangle. Her husband, Salvador Alvarez, co-owns Chito Taco in Raleigh. Eater named Fonda one of the U.S.'s 11 best new restaurants. She says, Yes, we're not sure when and we're not sure how. Eventually, maybe in the future, I would love to do something in the middle of Fonda and Cheeto or even collaborate with them and bring it to the Triangle. And finally, a big number, $14 million. What the Lionsgate housing community in Johnston County sold for recently, both the buyer and seller are businesses that fall under the umbrella of local businessman Fred Smith, Jr. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page, written by Zach Ezone. Firm targets flow of healthcare data. Medicom wants to make medical data easier to share. Three recent NC State University graduates are looking to change the way healthcare providers and patients can access medical information. While in college, Michael Rosenberg, Malcolm Bennett, and Chase Ballard learned from a member of an oncology network the difficulties care providers have in sharing a patient's medical information among one another. The trio developed a network to help solve this problem and started their Raleigh-based company, Medicom Technologies. The network allows care providers to pull all relevant clinical data for a patient, that is, for instance, having an upcoming procedure. Ultimately, the network is intended to help healthcare providers with sharing patient information and therefore improve patient outcomes. The company initially focused on creating a way for providers to more easily share medical images. But after working with healthcare systems, they found there were other areas to address as well. This includes finding a way to get medical disability information to insurance companies, CEO Rosenberg says. As you dig deeper and partner with health systems and learn about their challenges, we learn this is something that touches really every part of healthcare and healthcare information exchange, Rosenberg says. Medicom, founded in 2015, emerged from stealth mode in 2018 and raised $10 million in a Series A financing round. With that funding, the company established a commercially viable product and signed contracts with the Department of Veterans Affairs and other large health systems. Medicom now works with 1,000 organizations across the country. The company plans to build on this momentum after raising $21.8 million in a Series B financing round that closed in November. The new funds will allow the company to increase its number of employees, which has been in the 20s to 150, Rosenberg said. The additional staffing will enable the company to grow the number of healthcare systems it serves. We want to triple the size in terms of breadth and access, Rosenberg says. Raleigh Carey Hospitals listed as top facilities in national rankings. Two Triangle Healthcare Systems have been recognized as having top hospitals in the U.S. The Leapfrog Group, a nonprofit watchdog focused on healthcare safety and quality, announced December 7 the 149 winners of the nonprofit's Top Hospital Award. In the Triangle, WakeMed Health and UNC Rex took home honors. WakeMed Carey Hospital was one of three facilities in North Carolina that earned an award in general hospital category. The other two were Advent Health, Hendersonville, and Wake Forest Baptist Health, Davie Medical Center. UNC Rex in Raleigh was the only hospital in North Carolina to be recognized by Leapfrog as a top teaching hospital. The winners were broken up into four categories: general, rural, teaching, and children's hospitals. Hospitals earn these awards based on the results of an annual survey assessing hospital safety, quality, and efficiency. Another Durham Pharma taking SPAC route. A Durham company is going public through a merger with a special purpose acquisition company. Biopharmaceutical firm Aramy Therapeutics, that's spelled A-E-R-A-M-I, Therapeutics, announced December 7 its agreement to combine with Fox Wayne Acquisition Corporation. The latter is a SPAC, or blank check company, formed for the purpose of completing a merger or some other business combination, typically with the intention to go public. As part of the deal, Fox Wayne will issue 25 million shares of its common stock, which represents consideration of about $250 million. Existing Aramy stockholders will convert their equity into the combined company stock and will own a majority of its outstanding shares after the transaction closes. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Thomas Stith, president of the North Carolina Community College System, on the money the system is receiving from the state budget. This includes money for a 5% salary increase for staff and faculty over the next 2 years and millions of dollars to build a recruitment and retention fund. And he says, "The community college system has not received, at least over the last 10 years, this level of financial investment." And finally, we have a big number, $40 million. That's how much a new Durham biotech, Tune Therapeutics, led by CEO Matt Cain, has emerged with as it tries to expand the potential reach of genetic medicine. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to a better world inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. Housing literacy nonprofits awarded $50,000 funding from annual awards. As housing costs rise in Durham, the burden on people with limited or no resources continues to grow. Helping those who are struggling to find a place to live amid an affordable housing crisis is the charge of Durham-based nonprofit Housing for New Hope. Executive Director Russell Pierce says the nonprofit, which works with about 600 people a year, conducts street outreach work, manages housing communities, and provides rapid rehousing services. For some of this work, the nonprofit receives government support, but not all of it. For instance, the government doesn't fund the services the nonprofit provides in supportive housing communities. Pierce says the nonprofit is looking to grow money the nonprofit receives for this kind of work. To that end, the organization recently received $50,000 through GlaxoSmithKline's annual Impact Awards, which Pierce says will serve as a foundational investment for the nonprofit. "We've been growing rapidly and doubled our staff to 30 over the last couple of years," he says. Read and Feed is another nonprofit to receive funding from GSK's annual Impact Awards. The nonprofit helps children in the Triangle from kindergarten through fifth grade with literacy and food security. Executive Director Sherry Overton Shudra says the funding will help the nonprofit work with more than 700 students this year, double its services to students. This means more tutoring, meals, and books for the students involved in the nonprofit's programs. GSK has distributed these awards annually in the Triangle for the last 13 years. This year, the company increased the amount it's awarding each of the 10 selected nonprofits from $40,000 to $50,000. Erica Henderson, Director of Community Partnerships with GSK, says the company partners with the Triangle Community Foundation to engage in a year-long process to select the chosen nonprofits. These nonprofits are the ones that work around social detriments of health, such as housing, education, and nutrition. The other eight nonprofits who received awards this year are Boomerang Youth, Communities in Partnership, Durham Literacy Center, Durham Nativity School, North Carolina Institute of Minority Economic Development, Porch Chapel Hill Carborough, The Carrying Place, and The Hispanic Liaison. And that was written by Zach Ezone. Girls on the Run names new executive director. Girls on the Run of the Triangle, a nonprofit that uses positive physical exercise to build the confidence of girls, has named Aisha Edwards its new executive director. Edwards began her new position December 1. Girls on the Run works with girls from the 3rd to 8th grades and looks to inspire the girls with a fun curriculum that integrates running. The program started with 13 girls in Charlotte in 1996 and has served more than 2 million girls across the U.S. Agency gives major gift to Safe Child in Raleigh. A Raleigh nonprofit fighting child abuse in Wake County has received $10,000 from Raleigh's Dan Thompson Agency to help fund Safe Child's nurturing program. And finally, Ammons Foundation names Rumbly new leader. Jesse Ammons Rumbly will take over as executive director of the Jandy Ammons Foundation, a family foundation that funds shovel-ready capital projects throughout the region. The foundation was started by Rumbly's parents, Jan and Andy Ammons, in 2012 and has donated more than $2 million since then. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read John Hood's column on higher education this episode. John Hood is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, "Yes, College Usually Pays Off." Is the purpose of a university education to prepare graduates to get jobs? I am sufficiently old-fashioned to believe campuses should be places to pursue rigorous scholarship, to cultivate leaders, and to pursue the life of the mind. That's not how most students see it, of course, so realism is required. To restate the question, then, is college worth it for those seeking to boost their lifelong earnings? On average, yes, but beware of the fallacy of the average. To say the average college graduate earns 67% more than the average worker with only a high school diploma is not to say that going to college will boost your income by 67%. The most important point of all, though, is that no one really gets a generic university degree. You get a degree in a particular discipline from a particular institution. When it comes to post-graduation salaries, all campuses and majors are most certainly not created equal. That's the message reinforced by a fascinating new study by Preston Cooper, a research fellow at the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. Combining statistics from a new federal site, collegescorecard.ed.gov, with other data, Cooper constructed a model to measure the return on investment, or ROI, students can expect to receive by earning undergraduate degrees from one of the 1,200 institutions in his database. By ROI, Cooper means the present value of your lifetime earnings minus the earnings you'd likely have earned without the degree minus the cost to you of obtaining the degree. Are some of these values only rough estimates? Of course, that's still better than excluding them from the analysis. There are dozens of North Carolina colleges and universities in Cooper's database, so I'll provide a few examples to illustrate the wide range of results. Getting a bachelor's degree in computer engineering from NC State University will, on average, boost your lifetime earnings by a net of $1.13 million. The payoff from a degree in fire protection from UNC Charlotte is $1.12 million. An economics degree from Duke University generates an eye-popping $2.7 million ROI. On the other hand, Cooper found that a Duke chemistry degree results in a net loss of $50,000. A psychology degree from High Point University has a negative ROI of $79,000. Dance, minus $268,000. And drama, minus $332,000. Degrees from East Carolina University produce ever larger losses when comparing costs and payoffs. This is not an argument against the performing arts or for everyone trying to major in STEM fields. I happen to know folks with dance and drama degrees who live happy and fulfilling lives. And I know some really bored engineers. When it comes to college costs and benefits, though, honesty is the best policy. We should help our young people make fully informed choices among a wide spectrum of alternative paths after high school. And we'll have to stop there as we've run out of time. For today's episode of Triangle Business Journal, be sure to listen next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. For more information, or if you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.